Chapter 2. Let us begin at the beginning. The club. The cataclysm. My 11th life and the deaths which followed, none peaceful. All are meaningless. A flash of violence that bursts and withers away. Retribution without cause. Until you understand where it all began. My name is Harry August. My father is Rory Edmund Hune, my mother Elizabeth Leadmill, though I was not to know any of this until well into my third life. I do not know whether to say that my father raped my mother or not. The law would have some difficulty in assessing the case. The jury could perhaps be swayed by a clever individual one way or the other. I am told that she did not scream, did not fight, didn't even say no when he came to her in the kitchen on the night of my conception, and in 25 inglorious minutes of passion, in that anger and jealousy and rage are passions of their kind, took revenge on his faithless wife by means of the kitchen girl. In this regard, my mother was not forced, but then, as a girl of some 20 years old, living and working in my father's house, dependent for her future on his money and his family's goodwill, I would argue that she was given no chance to resist, coerced by her situation as much as by any blade held to the throat. By the time my mother's pregnancy began to show, my father had returned to active duty in France, where he was to serve out the rest of the First World War, as a largely undistinguished major in the Scots Guards. In a conflict where whole regiments could be wiped out in a single day, undistinguished was a rather enviable attainment. It was therefore left to my paternal grandmother, Constance Hune, to expel my mother from her home, without a reference, in the autumn of 1918. The man who was to become my adopted father, and yet a truer parent to me than any biological relation, took my mother to the local market on the back of his pony cart, and left her there with some few shillings in her purse, and a recommendation to seek the help of other distressed ladies of the county. A cousin, Alistair, who shared a mere 1/8 of my mother's genetic material, but whose surplus of wealth more than made up for a deficit of familial connections, gave my mother work on the floor of his Edinburgh paper mill. However, as she grew larger, and increasingly unable to carry out her duties, she was quietly moved on by a junior official some 3 rungs away from the responsible party. In desperation, she wrote to my biological father, but the note was intercepted by my shrewd grandmother, who destroyed it before he could read my mother's plea, and so, on New Year's Eve, 1918, my mother spent her last few pennies on the slow train from Edinburgh Waverley to Newcastle, and some 10 miles north of Berwick-upon-Tweed, went into labour. A trade unionist by the name of Douglas Cranage and his wife Prudence were the only 2 people present at my birth, in the ladies' washroom of the station. I am told that the station master stood outside the door to prevent any innocent women coming inside, his hands clasped behind his back and his cap, crowned with snow, pulled down over his eyes in a manner I have always imagined as being rather hooded and malign. There were no doctors at the infirmary at this late hour and on this festive day, and the medic took over 3 hours to arrive. He came too late. The blood was already crystallizing on the floor, and Prudence Cranage was holding me in her arms at his arrival. My mother was dead. I have only the report of Douglas for the circumstances of her demise, but I believe she hemorrhaged out and is buried in a grave marked Lisa, D. 1st of January 1919. Angels guide her into light. Mrs. Cranage, when the undertaker asked her what should be on the stone, realized that she had never known my mother's full name. Some debate ensued about what to do with me, this suddenly orphaned child. I believe Mrs. Cranage was sorely tempted to keep me for her own, but finances and practicality informed against this decision, as did Douglas Cranage's firm and literal interpretation of the law, and rather more personal understanding of propriety. The child had a father, he exclaimed, and the father had a right to the child. This matter would have been rather moot, were it not that my mother was carrying about her person the address of my soon-to-be-adopted father, Patrick August, presumably with the intention of enlisting his help in seeing my biological father, Rory Hune. Inquiries were made as to whether this man, Patrick, could be my father, which caused quite a stir in the village, as Patrick had been long married, childlessly, to my adopted mother, Harriet August, and a barren marriage in a border village, where the notion of the condom was regarded as taboo well into the 1970s, was always a topic of furious debate. The matter was so shocking that it very quickly made its way to the manor house itself, Hune Hall, wherein resided my grandmother, Constance, my two aunts, Victoria and Alexandra, my cousin Clement, and Lydia, the unhappy wife of my father. I believe my grandmother immediately suspected whose child I was and the circumstances of my situation, but refused to take responsibility for me. It was Alexandra, my younger aunt, who showed a presence of mind and a compassion that the rest of her kin lacked, and seeing that suspicion would fairly quickly turn to her family once the truth of my dead mother's identity was revealed, approached Patrick and Harriet August with this offer, that if they were to adopt the child and raise it as their own, the papers formally signed and witnessed by the Hune family itself to quiet all rumours of an illegitimate affair, for no one carried authority like the inhabitants of Hune Hall, then she would personally see to it that they received a monthly amount of money for their pains and to support the child, and that on his growing up she would ensure that his prospects were suitable, not excessive, mind, but neither the sorry situation of a bastard. Patrick and Harriet debated a while, then accepted. I was raised as their child, as Harry August, and it wasn't until my second life that I began to understand where I was from and what I was.